Small business owners, this one's for you. Chase for Business and iHeart bring you a new podcast series called The Unshakeables. This one-of-a-kind series will shine the spotlight on small business owners like you who faced a do-or-die moment that ultimately made their business what it is today. Learn more at chase.com/business/podcast. Chase, make more of what's yours. Chase mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. JPMorgan Chase Bank, N.A. member, FDIC. Copyright 2024, JPMorgan, Chase & Co. The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count for your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hey, Dream listeners. It's me, Jane. Did you forget about me? I have not forgotten about you. There's something I've been wanting to tell you for a very long time. The Dream is coming back. We'll be releasing new episodes right here on this feed in just a few months. And maybe someday I'll tell you why it took so long. In the meantime, we've been working on a new show called Other People's Pockets. It's hosted by Maya Lau, a former investigative journalist for the LA Times. Other People's Pockets, or OPP as we like to call it around the office, it's about other people's money. But unlike a lot of other money podcasts that give advice about how to make more of it, Maya just wants to know how we spend it and how we save it, and most importantly, why we all get paid different amounts compared to the same person sitting right next to us with far less experience. OPP is full of real numbers. We're talking salary, net worth, net worthless, all the good stuff. In each episode, she goes there. It gets uncomfortable, which is fun. And today we're turning the tables on our host. I'm taking over Maya's show, and I'm going to be asking her everything she puts to her guests. And she has to answer because she said she would. So without further ado, Maya, welcome to your own show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Tell me a little about yourself, what you do.
I created and also host this podcast that you're listening to called Other People's Pockets. And I am a journalist and a researcher and have done many things. But now one of the main things I'm doing is this podcast.
One of the main things? What else are you doing?
I also have a company and I do financial investigation type research through that. I was a journalist, an investigative reporter for many years, and then left that. And I only mention that because like a lot of the skills of reporting are the same in other industries. And so now I've applied that to this whole world of financial investigation. So like one of my clients is an investment firm, and I help them research different investments, different people behind investments, like trying to get to the heart of like understanding a company or something like that.
Okay. And how much do you make doing that?
So last year, that was one of my main sources of income, and I made around $200,000 a year last year. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I'll make that much this year just because now the podcast is picking up and I have, you know, like, yeah. I need to dial up and dial down different things. But yeah.
And then on this show, how much do you make?
So on this show, my contract is for 35 episodes. That's how many episodes are in a season. Mm-hmm. And we do a weekly show. So that's really less than a year. But so if per season, I'm being paid, I think, around $122,000 as a base payment. Mm-hmm. And then I get revenue share. So I make 25% of any ads, subscriptions, if we do events, merchandise, anything like that. And then there's, separate, this hasn't happened, but like separate percentages for if I were to ever do a book or a TV show or anything based on that. But
so the derivative works or IP stuff.
Yes.
Can I tell you a secret?
Yeah.
You make so much more money than me. Like so much more money.
You mean overall or for the podcast?
I mean, I'd probably in a year maybe make what you make on the podcast.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Maybe. But I don't know. You make so much more money than me.
I don't know that I'm going to make that amount again, you know, like because of how much do I want to work or like how much can I work?
How much do you want to work?
I mean, I work full time, but I don't like hustle and grind the way I used to. So like right now, how much I work is how much I want to work. But I don't want to like be like, oh, my God, it's 9 p.m. and I need to like work for two more hours to finish something.
I mean, there's obvious reasons why not. But can you tell me why not? Was there a moment where you brought it up in therapy or like wrote it in your planner, like I'm not going to do this anymore?
Well, I mean, I had a child 3 years ago, and that has been a huge shift in my life. And I just don't, I mean, taking care of a child is kind of another job. You know, it's like when she comes home, then I have that job. And my husband does too. But like, you know, that takes a lot out of you. And so by 9 p.m., I'm completely exhausted. And I think I just have a different outlook on grind culture. Like, I think it was probably necessary for me when I was younger. Mm-hmm. And had to prove myself and had more energy in my 20s. And I loved it. Like, I loved that I stayed at the office until 8 p.m. or whatever. But yeah, now I'm just like, you know, I really want to work smarter, not harder. And like, I have a life. Mm-hmm. And I just don't have the energy that I used to. And I want to like, now I feel kind of, I'm equally ambitious, but now I'm more ambitious about achieving quote unquote work-life balance. Like that feels like also a hard thing to achieve. Mm-hmm. So I might as well be ambitious about that.
Will you take me back to your first job?
I think my first job, I was in middle school. I don't know when like child labor laws begin, but I think I was in middle school or maybe I was in early high school. I worked very part-time at this local gift store wrapping presents. And it was only in the holidays that I did that particular job. But when they had a bunch of people buying stuff and needed help wrapping presents, I would do that.
How much money did you make wrapping presents?
It would have been minimum wage, which I don't remember what that was.
And what year was this?
This was in the late 90s.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're wrapping presents. What's your next job?
The next job I had was at Bernini's Bistro in La Jolla.
La Jolla, the town of Dr. Seuss.
Is it? Oh, yes, it is.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you know that?
It's famous for being that. It looks like a Dr. Seuss book. Like, you know, like all the crazy trees and the weird houses on cliffs. And like, if you read any of the Dr. Seuss books, it looks just like the with walruses and weird or whatever those sea lions are. And,
lions.
Like the houses up on the cliff and like weird topiary looking bushes and dolphins and stuff. I don't know. And just for our listeners who are not familiar with Southern California, aside from La Jolla being the home of Dr. Seuss, La Jolla is so bougie.
Yes.
La Jolla is very fancy, rich people town. It's where the Kardashians' grandma lives.
Oh, that I didn't know. You know all this La Jolla trivia that I didn't know. So, yeah, La Jolla is a very, it's right on the water. La Jolla Shores is one of, like, the best beaches, considered one of the best beaches in San Diego, just because it's very clean and, like, the waves are nice. And it is a very, yeah, it's a very kind of ridiculous but beautiful area.
I'm assuming you lived nearby La Jolla.
I lived probably a 20-minute drive on the freeway to the east. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I lived in an area that was like a suburban. It was like upper middle class, mm-hmm. But definitely not like. So I actually went to church in La Jolla. That is why I was even like in that area. And like meeting the like La Jolla High kids at there was like a different mm-hmm. a different level of like wealth and water polo-ness. But yeah.
Do you remember having feelings about the rich kids?
Yeah. I mean, I think that then I felt like a lot of envy around stuff like that. But in high school, when I had the job at the restaurant, I think I felt kind of like those kids are just really different. Like, I just didn't identify with them. Mm-hmm. I didn't identify with the water polo crowd. I was a little bit more, like, alternative.
That's very specific, by the way. I don't think a lot of people identify with
right,
the water
like
polo
the lacrosse crowd. So I think I just kind of was like, okay, whatever. But I was aware of it, for sure.
Will you tell me a little about your upbringing around money?
Like, sure.
You told me that you guys were upper middle class.
Yes. And that sticks in my head just because I remember asking my mom what class we were at some point growing up. And that's mm-hmm. what she said. And so I just take it as fact. Like, yeah, okay, that's what we must have been. At the same time, for us, there was a lot of treading water that went on to maintaining our upper middle class status, especially after my parents got divorced when I was around 8. And, mm-hmm. you know, at one point my mom had her own business and was not bringing in much money. And we barely held on to our house. You know, my mom really worked her ass off, and really both my parents did, to maintain what we had. My mom was putting absolutely everything on credit cards at one point. So mm-hmm. there was just a lot that was kind of holding up the appearances and kind of keeping it all going, even when it wasn't always going so well. So my parents are both retired, but my dad was an architect and a construction manager, and my mom was a public television producer and then later a university administrator. Yeah, I definitely remember there being one point where there was this road, this big road that we were near. And if you crossed to the other side of the road, there was like these like McMansions and like bigger mm-hmm. houses. And I had a friend over there, and I was probably, I want to say I was like 9 or something. And I went over to my friend's house and played there, and she just had this huge house. It was just amazing. And my dad was driving me home from the play date, and I was kind of like, oh, like, why can't we live over on that side of the road? And you know, at so-and-so's house, we did this and this and this. And he was so stern with me mm-hmm. and like, Maya, like, you have no idea the sacrifices your mom and I have made to have the house that we do have. Like, don't you ever, like, I don't ever want to hear this conversation again. This is absolutely ridiculous. And he's right, because like,
life was fine.
Yeah. And I feel like everybody, no matter what status they had, like, they always have some story about like, well, like, I wasn't like these other people that I knew growing up.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, but you were also fine. So that's also me. Like, I felt growing up, certainly when I was in high school, I was like, oh, this is so vanilla and like so boring. But I would not say it was like Truman Show-y or
okay.
like it wasn't, I don't know. Also, like, so the celebrity from my neighborhood is Kyle Mooney, the comedian. So I would love, like, maybe he needs to, like, I need, like, another perspective because, like...
Let's get him on the show. I want to call Kyle Mooney right now.
I would love his take on... He, like, has some comedy about growing up in Scripps Ranch, which is the name of the neighborhood in San
Diego.
Well,
they have that, like, whole YouTube channel where it was, like, all jokes about growing up there.
Yeah, so, like reporting live from, like, the taco shop. Yeah, that was very much my childhood.
Hey, what's up? I'm Todd.
What up, I'm Eric.
And this is Inside SoCal. We give you the inside scoop on the SoCal lifestyle.
And now for our financial report, we're going to go to our boy, Nate. What up, dude?
So in financial news, Sean and I worked for my dad last weekend doing, like, landscaping and shit. And we got paid, like, $200 each.
Oh, stoked.
If your daughter, who lives in Mexico City, and who's going to reach consciousness and going to form core memories, if your daughter were to go from where she lives now to the what's it called?
Scripps Ranch.
Scripps Ranch. What would her assessment be?
We joked, by the way, that there should be a strip club there called Strips Ranch, but that has not opened yet. What would her assessment of it be?
Yeah.
I mean, she would probably be like, the one of two things. She could, on the one hand, be like, this is freaking awesome. Like, you know, there's places to swim and walk and play. Or she could also be like, this is really boring. And why do I have to drive everywhere? So
right.
I guess it depends on which age she's at.
Yeah. Okay. So you grew up in this...
Inside SoCal.
Inside SoCal. Yeah. Okay, so you grow up inside SoCal.
Yes. Yeah. If anyone wants to know how I grew up, just watch Inside SoCal. Yeah.
Okay, you grew up there. Then you go to La Jolla and you work as a hostess because you're pretty at a restaurant.
Oh, wow.
That's what it is. Isn't it? Like, the hot girls are always the hostess.
Well, also, I didn't have any skill. So, yeah, I didn't have any, like, waitressing skill.
You only had to work one day a week all through high school?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. What did you get to do with your money?
I mean, I think I was probably, like, supposed to save X percentage of it.
Okay, but you didn't. You just spent
it. What did you...
I moved out when I was 16, so I spent it on rent. But before that, I had to pay my own lunch. My mom wouldn't pay for my lunch. Cigarettes, beer.
Those are good things.
What else? I didn't have a car. Bus tickets, you know, to get around.
Mm-hmm.
Acid. Acid was, like, the most, my biggest expense. In, like, 9th and 10th grade. Because it was, like, $7, which if a pack of cigarettes is $1 and acid $7, it's kind of hard to, like, justify it, but I would just skip meals.
So $7 per... What do you call it? Like, per hit?
Per square. Per tab.
Per experience?
Per hit, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. That was very expensive, especially because when I was working, it was like the minimum wage was like in the $2 or $3 range.
Right.
So I would have to work for 2 or 3 hours to afford one hit of acid.
One. Yeah. Budgeting.
Anyway. Get us up to where we are now. If you just want to, like, list off the jobs that you had and what you remember making.
Yeah. So after college, I had a job at a law firm in New York. I thought I wanted to be a lawyer and I thought it'd be good to work at a law firm for a while. Ended up definitely not wanting to go to law school or be a lawyer. But I...
Why?
Part of it is the dress code. I just was like, I can't wear these suits every day. Like, I remember there was somebody, some other lawyer who's not from our firm who came in. And she was, like, in the kitchen or something of the office. And I was just like, she had, like, this colorful, cool, offbeat, like, still professional looking, but, like, colorful, like, scarvy kind of... Like, maybe she could also have been an art professor. Like, it was, like, just not... And I remember being like, where did you get your... Like, what? And we talked all about, like, the dress code of law firms and, like, how stifling it is. And anyway, I think I just was exploring a really different side of myself. And it had been a thing that I had said to everyone I was going to do, and so told myself, like, I'm going to go to law school. And so it actually became kind of fun at some point to be like, I'm not even going to do the thing that I told everyone that I was going to do. Like, whoops. Like, I don't know. After that, I joined the Peace Corps. And like during that time, I just really reevaluated things in my
life. There are so many things about your life, I got to say, Maya, that make you sound so rich. Like, like joining the Peace Corps. How do you pay for life when you're in the Peace Corps?
You don't. So you get to put all your loans on hold when you're in the Peace Corps.
Nice.
Like you get to literally press pause. You don't, they don't accrue interest.
Mm-hmm. And then your expenses are covered when you're in there?
Yeah, all of your expenses are covered.
Where did you go?
I was in Senegal in West Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't have a need to like bring in a lot of money for mm-hmm. 2 years, like it is definitely a privilege to not like have to bring in a certain amount to support your parents or somebody else.
Do they pay you in the Peace Corps at all?
Yeah. So technically you're called a volunteer, but you do make a small stipend and it's enough to like survive in whatever country you're in.
Are we talking hundreds or are we talking thousands a month?
Gosh, I think it was $100 a month or something like that. Yeah.
So then you get out of the Peace Corps.
And then I got a job at the New York Times.
As one does.
As one does. And I could tell you like how that happened.
Tell me.
So when I was in the Peace Corps, I was really started to be interested in writing and in journalism. And a really smart friend of mine in the Peace Corps, because I had lived in New York before and I was talking about going back to New York after. And I was like, oh, I guess when I go back to New York, I'll like start networking and journalism. And she was like, what are you talking about? You should network here in Senegal. And I was like, who is there to network with here in Senegal? And she's like, there's journalists all over the world, like international journalists based in Dakar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would reach out to people and I ended up reaching out to the person that was then the New York Times bureau chief for West Africa and he lived in Dakar. Yeah, so like through that connection is how I ended up getting a job at the New York Times.
How much was your salary at the Times?
$50,000 a year.
Do you get any benefits with that or is it like a contract thing?
No, I was staff, so I got health benefits and stuff.
Then what?
So then I really wanted to try to be a reporter, and it was very hard to move up at the New York Times. So I had some mentors tell me, like, you should try to go be a crime reporter in the South. And so I got a job at the Shreveport Times in Louisiana, and I think my salary was around $38,000 a year mm-hmm. there.
And then how long did you do that?
I was there for a little over a year, and then I went to The Advocate in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and made $42,000 a year. I did get raises there, up to, I think I got up to like $50,000 there.
Which is significant. Like if you're talking starting at 40, that's pretty great. It's not like a 2%, 3% raise, you know, that's like a merit raise.
Yeah. And also, like, looking back on it, it was kind of amazing that I was able to get raises because then later at the LA Times, that was the job I had after that. It was really hard to get a raise.
Really?
At all. Yeah.
I want to be more like your parents as a parent, but, like, your parents couldn't be more different from my parents. Like, my parents have a lot of ideas about, like, morals and money and ethics and money and, like, you know, like, the prosperity gospel shit. And, like, if you're not working really hard all the time, you're not going to appreciate what you have, that kind of stuff. And that no one should get a handout, all that crap.
Mm.
I don't agree with it now. But can you just talk to me about, like, what your parents
taught me about money?
Yeah. And what did they get taught about money?
I feel like I grew up feeling like money was not something that should be your main goal in life. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that the people who did really prioritize money or want to make a lot of money were like lame and stupid and like didn't have any culture. And like, you don't want to be like that. Like, you want to be someone who changes the world, or like at least like tries to make the world a better place, mm-hmm. isn't trying to like take resources from other people. And you should want to make like enough money, but that's kind of where I have now interrogated that further, because I'm like, what is enough? Or like, what, like, you should just want to make like an amount that sort of maintains sort of your current standard of living, mm-hmm. Which now I believe is actually a lot of money, you know? Yeah. Like, my ideas were very like, you should study hard and then like hopefully you'll get to do something that you really love and that's really cool. And, you know, like, you're not going to be not making any money, but the paycheck is not something that you should be thinking about. Like, that's mm-hmm. kind of, I think, the mentality that I grew up with. Mm-hmm. I guess they probably saw themselves as like intellectuals or whatever. Like, they kind of felt like, if you're doing something that's really interesting and impactful, like, that is, like, that has the most cachet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think my mom had a similar mindset. Like, she went to a school that was very social justice oriented. She felt like the people who, you know, they just, like, maybe they own a home and they have their little yard and they have, you know, just, like, the things they need, like, that's, like, honorable. That it's, like, actually honorable to not make a lot of money. That's, like, what she believed.
I wish that was, like, true still.
I know. And
like, that you didn't have to be a millionaire to have a little tiny house.
Yeah. And that's why, you know? I kind of am, like, I think that it's a little maybe simplistic to be just, like, oh, you know, like, You don't need anything, and just, you know, put your head down and save your pennies. It's like, that's not gonna
how money works,
like,
anymore.
Yeah, like, you're gonna have to like be pretty smart about what's happening, and be really honest with yourself about what kind of life you want.
Tell me about your move and how that, like, the money decisions around your move.
So we were in Seattle because we really didn't like the place that we were living in L.A., which was, like, surrounded by barbed wire and not great. So we moved to Seattle to be near my sister, whose kid is the same age as ours. And then we decided to move to Mexico City, which is where we are now. You know, that was basically an opportunity that came up because of my husband's job. And it was not, like, a mandatory thing, but it was, like, you could live in Mexico City and continue to expand your portfolio of work in Latin America. And so it was just an exciting thing. I think we kind of also felt like we have a few more chances maybe to move before our kid turns 5 and needs to go to kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
I think in terms of the money considerations, I think that it did feel attractive and interesting to move to a place where we could save some serious money,
mm-hmm.
and also just be living in a really interesting international city. And I mean, it should also be said that, like, it is very colonialist to decide as an American that you want to live in Mexico. Like, mm-hmm. there's a lot of people around the world that would love to just decide to live in the U.S. and they can't. So it's not something that I take lightly, and, like, it is very complicated to just move somewhere like this.
Is there anything that, since you've been there, where you're like, wow, this is so much cheaper?
Oh, we have a personal trainer.
Oh.
Jesse and I go together, and it's $25 a session for both of us.
Wow. That's so good. Now you're living in Mexico City. You're living off of his income.
Yeah.
You're saving your income.
Yeah.
What would you say your net worth is right now? Do you own anything?
No, we don't own anything.
Okay.
We don't own cars. We sold both of our cars before moving here.
Do you have debt?
No, we actually just paid off Jesse's and mine. Well, mine were technically paid off a bit beforehand, but we just paid off Jesse's maybe a year or two ago.
His student loans?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
He's 48.
48. Yeah. Oh, my God. And he just paid off his student loans. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. That's criminal.
Yeah, I know. So I think together, our net worth is like $400,000.
Wow.
So it's basically, yeah, retirement and then I guess some savings and cash.
I feel like we've talked about this before, but if you just want to refresh me, like the choice to have one or two or more kids for you really came down to money.
I mean, in part, we've decided to have one kid just because we really don't think we can handle two. Like, our one is, she's amazing and she's just a huge personality. Mm-hmm. And she's three. So I'm like, we can't have another. Like, I don't get how people do this again. But it is also partially like, we're like in a good place now. And I don't want to go backward. I want to feel like we're like putting money away and, I don't know, moving forward and maybe going to be able to buy a house one day or something.
Is that your main purchase that you're looking forward to?
I would say that's the main one, although there's this part of me that is like, maybe we're just not those people. Like,
is there another part of you that's like, we'll take the savings and then not really have to work much and live in an RV?
Not in an RV.
Why?
But
I want an RV.
Because I don't know, like, I've never, like, personally...
Houseboat?
My thing is more like, maybe we are just the type of people that are just going to keep moving around.
To cities.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
To, like, cool cities.
Yeah.
or, like, I mean, I would love to live in Europe one day. Like, yeah, in terms of the money savings, like, yeah, it's just, it's... to me, it kind of represents, like, freedom and stability and knowing, like, even having an emergency savings account now, I've found how freeing that is to be like,
yeah,
we're going to be okay.
What is enough money? Are you there? Is that the feeling you're having right now?
I mean, I'm one of those people who there's, like, different categories of enough. Like, you know, there's enough, like, I have and always have had more than enough, you know, like I have food and I have people around me who I love, who love me. And I have like a life and that's enough. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, like, are there other things that I really want that would feel even more like, oh, okay, like now we're good, or like, you know. I just really want to get to that place. Like, yeah, like there's still, I recognize that I don't need those things.
Do you know what that place is, like dollar-wise or like possessions-wise?
I mean, like, I think possessions-wise, it's having like a soaking tub or like a a bathtub that I feel like not everywhere.
I think you could probably do that right now. A soaking tub? How much is a soaking tub?
Like, but I can't, like, I rent. Like, I can't, like, bring in.
Sure you can.
Maybe.
Yeah,
there's no room for it, though, because there's, like, an existing. I feel like everywhere I live, I can't have a hot bath because it doesn't.
It doesn't work.
Like, it, like, there's only so much hot water, and then it starts to go cold, you know? And so, like, that's one of those things where I'm like, one day I'm going to have like a piping hot bath and like a huge soaking tub.
You can come over to my house. Next time you come to LA, I'll let you soak in my tub.
Yeah, we can enjoy the drought together. yeah.
I know it's fun and kind of voyeuristic to dig into other people's finances. Mm-hmm. How does it feel having the table turned?
Yeah, I think as of a few years ago, I would have been like, oh, I don't think I could do that. Like, these are conversations that I have a lot. There's always a risk when you talk about how much money you make that somebody's going to, like, have a judgment about it. Mm. Like, you sound so rich. Like, that was like interesting feedback to get, because it's like, that's your reaction. Like, I think I wonder, like, if it makes you not like me as much or like think something about me. I think that is why people are uncomfortable, is like they're worried about like not really the number almost, yeah, but like what's the like added thing that someone's gonna say, you know?
Do you feel like it's important work?
Yes, I really do. The more I talk to people about this, the more just I learn for myself, like, oh, this is how much someone makes. Like, it's just information and it's transparency. And
yeah,
so I think it's really great to learn, like, oh, that's an amount that is you can make if you want. Mm-hmm. And so I think for that reason, it's good. And I also just think, yeah, just the questions that inspire the most anxiety, like sometimes just that says something, that says there's something that needs to come out or there's something there that's worth exploring. So yeah, I definitely do feel like I wouldn't like pat myself on the back and be like, I'm like, you know, saving the world. But I do think like I hope that there's good being done.
Yeah, Maya, I would love to have you back on the show anytime.
Oh, awesome. It would be an honor. It would be an honor to be able to do this.
No, thank you so much, though, for being so open.
Sure. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Other People's Pockets. And hey, this is a new show, so if you like it, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. It really, really helps us out. Other People's Pockets is written and hosted by me, Maya Lau. It's produced by me, along with Joy Sanford and Dan Gallucci. Production help from Angela Vang. Our executive producers are me, along with Jane Marie and Dan Gallucci. Other People's Pockets is a co-production of Pushkin Industries and Little Everywhere. To find more Pushkin podcasts, listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you love this show, consider subscribing to Pushkin Plus, offering bonus content and ad-free listening across our network for $4.99 a month. Look for the Pushkin Plus channel on Apple Podcasts or at pushkin.fm. You can sign up for Pushkin newsletters at pushkin.fm. And find me on Twitter at Maya Lau or on Instagram and TikTok at It's Maya Money.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of two clinically studied ingredients in one revolutionary formula: berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just two capsules a today. Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. Right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.